diplomatic immunity.
Can I just say how glad I am to be at this inquiry and how sorry I am for the pain and the loss and the suffering.
What an asshole!
Oh, the weather outside.
They go, Marv.
But the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Hello and welcome to Pod Culture Vultures.
Now please listen very carefully. Die Hard is not a Christmas movie.
Fuck me till I fart.
With me, Dino. And join with me, as always, is my hetero life mate, Kev Arenosh. How's it hanging, Kev?
Wonderful, my darling, wonderful.
Lovely jubbly. So, a couple of weeks off of the Crimbo craziness.
Yeah, it's coming around quick, isn't it?
It is, and we're having a little record. In it's been quite mild, actually. It's not been as cold as the last time we were in here.
It's because it can't make its bloody mind up. 1 minute, it's like minus one.
Yeah.
And then I think out there today, it's about 13 degrees.
Yeah, it's that rain as well makes it really horrible, doesn't it?
Yeah, it makes it wet.
Well, yeah, it does make it wet. But
mind you, we've had it all today. I mean, I think I went out early. I think it was about sort of 10 degrees at the time. Miserable, raining.
Yeah.
And then I've come around here, bit of blue skies, bit of sunshine, bit of wind.
And then it is raining as well.
Yeah. No, it weren't raining then. It probably will be on the way home.
It was raining in the sunshine earlier.
Was it?
Yeah.
That's the weirdest one.
Yeah.
I mean, where's it come from?
Weird beard. So what have you been up to then, Sausage?
Work, double work.
Yeah, same as me.
Yeah.
Same
grafting,
as me.
Mate. Grafting.
Yeah, getting the pennies in for the big day.
Yeah. Well, the pennies are like disappearing thick and fast, I tell you.
Tell me about it, mate. Yeah. Tell me about it.
I popped into Lidl earlier on to get a pack of bacon for the pasta tonight. It came out about 45 quid later. I was like, oh, I might as well get some cheeses. I can get a bit of this. I can get a bit of that.
That's how they get you, mate. As soon as you're in there.
That's it.
And then you end up down middle Lidl buying a load of crap you don't need. Electric fucking bread
knife. I bypass that. No, because I know what you mean. You go in there, they have the old
set of socket spanners for only $4.99.
Yeah, don't need them, but I love them.
I'll never use them. Never going to use them.
So it's just work in the academic years, like rounding up, starting to like really wind down now.
Mm.
So it's just that, and then just watching a few sort of Christmassy movies and bits and pieces when I can.
Yeah. I haven't actually started on the old Christmas films just yet. I'm just trying to think. I've been watching the Ilsa films. Do you know what they are?
Ilsa films?
Yeah, Ilsa. I-L-S-A. It's like, when I watched the other day, Ilsa, the Wicked Warden. And they're like proper exploitation films.
What, from the 70s or something?
Yeah. And it's the woman Elsa, she's in four of the films. Massive knockers. But it's proper like that. So one of them's Elsa, She-Wolf of the SS.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It's the Wicked Warden, and then you've got the something of the Harem, and then another one of the Saudi Tigress sort of thing. But yeah, just it's by this guy, I think they're like German or Italian, Jess Francesco. He's done loads of exploitation films, like most of them that involve like scantily clad naked women fighting.
Right up your alley, Blackadder.
Yeah, but yeah, I've been watching a bit of that, and there's quite a lot of old slasher films and stuff like that I haven't seen before that I'm kind of watching, but a lot of them are shit.
They always were, though, weren't they?
No, I'm shit. But what I was going to say is, and we may have to do, I think we should do a full pod about this next year. It's a film called Love and a 45. Have you ever heard of that?
Nope.
It's fucking brilliant. I've forgotten how good it was.
Is it one of these films?
No.
Right. Okay, we've moved on.
Sorry, yes. Yeah. I've
skip to the end.
It's more of a... it's still like an independent type film. Early 90s. The way that I'd explain it, basically, is if Kevin Smith tried to make a Tarantino-style film.
Okay.
It's got Renee Zellweger in it, which I think is one of her first roles.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy from Ally McBeal, I think he was one of the Dark Air, one of her... Don't know.
God knows. No. All I know is Ally McBeal goes out of Han Solo.
He was in Sanity the other day.
That's all I remember.
Yeah. He was in Sanity the other day, but I can't quite put my finger on it or whether you'd have watched it as well.
What, one of the main guys from Ally McBeal?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Anyway, it's...
I think I might know who you mean
there. It's pretty much a bit like Natural Born Killers, True Romance.
Right, okay.
And it's got one of the guys from Dazed and Confused in it, but I'll have to watch it with you because it is funny. Then, all of a sudden, in the middle of it, Peter Fonda crops up as like an old hippie who's lost his voice box because he tore it out on an LSD trip that went wrong. He's stuck in here, like that, one of those things.
Like Partridge.
Yeah. The two villain guys are great characters.
What's it called?
It's called Love and a 45.
Love and a 45?
Yeah, it's Renee Zellweger, early film. But, yeah, I'll have to watch it with you because I want to get your reaction to some of it and that. But I'll say this one bit, the guy who's gone mental because he's had too much fucking shit stuffed up his nose and that, and he's looking for them because they've... It's kind of like Tremors where they've killed someone and they're running away sort of thing, and Robin type, Bonnie and Clyde type thing.
Sure, yeah.
But anyway, he has all his hair shaved off and then he's in a tattoo parlour. He's having a massive eagle tattooed on his bald head.
Yeah.
Right, with like the claws coming right down above his eyebrows. But there's this woman in there. Obviously, he's sat there, like, bloke's tattooing him, and he's got like a bottle of beer in one hand and a gun in the other. And he's obviously wired. And she goes, "You are so radical, man." And he goes, "Shut up." But no, definitely we'll have to watch that because I forgot all about it and you couldn't get it anywhere here. And then I saw they released it on Blu-ray in like Sweden, and that works on our UK region. Bloody good.
Mine's been the opposite. I've just finished watching Get Back again, the old Beatles documentary.
Again?
Yeah.
What, the long one?
You've got the anthology, which is the beginning, the very beginning, like pretty much when they're born, to the end of the Beatles. And then you've got the Peter Jackson Get Back session, where it's all about how they made Let It Be.
That's about 5 hours, isn't it?
What, Get Back?
Or more.
It's about just under 8.5.
I see, haven't they released an extended version of it, like Lord of the Cunting Rings?
Maybe.
Well, in the end of it, Paul McCartney gets his ring and then drops it into a fucking volcano. Fucks off back home.
Pisses Lennon right off.
Yeah. Gives him a blowy.
I love that. It's brilliant.
It is real good insight into... you know what I mean? It's one of those things you can have on in the background and it's quite calming and you're almost like taken back in time to... And you see McCartney work out Get Back, in it.
Maybe we should do this as an episode, actually.
Yeah, like next we should year. Do that with the Beatles. Oh, funnily enough, I just watched a documentary about John Lennon being killed.
Oh, charming.
Well, no. Well, yeah, it's shit, but, you know. Well, no, obviously he was shot, wasn't he, outside the Dakota? And it was just kind of like a... It was a documentary about it, but there was like a lot of strange things that happened, like the Kennedy thing, where there's like conspiracy theories where they think because Mark Chapman was just, he didn't run away after he did it, he just was so matter of fact.
Yeah.
They're on about that they think he might have been a sleeper cell.
Oh, really?
Basically, because obviously the FBI and all that, they had files on John Lennon, based on the fact that he was a threat to the American government and all that.
Was a threat?
Yeah. That's why they wouldn't give him full residency. He was being deported.
What kind of threat was he then?
Well, just basically what he was saying. They didn't like hippies, did they? They didn't like people with free speech. They didn't like, you know...
Little round glasses.
Little round glasses. Give peace a chance. No thanks, Lennon. We quite like blowing the shit out of little people. What? Well, they do, don't they, bloody Americans? Bloody loose gun laws. Yes, yes. Yeah. Anyway, I watched that, but what was funny was... I also watched this film called What We Do Is Secret, which is a biopic of the punk band The Germs,
mm-hmm.
which Pat Smear was the guitarist for.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Shane, what was it, Shane something? Who's it? The guy from ER, he was in it as Darby Crash, the singer. But Darby Crash was more ugly than him. But it was just... because I like The Germs, I like the whole story of them and the band. But what it was Darby Crash committed suicide on the same night that Lennon got shot.
Right.
And it wasn't because of it, it was just a coincidence that had happened on the same night. And obviously, his thing was completely brushed away because it was overwhelmed with, obviously,
because of John Lennon,
yeah. But anyway, that's The Germs.
Now, what shall we talk about?
Oh, Die Hard 2.
Die Harder.
Now, you're saying this is a Christmas film as well.
It is a Christmas film. It's set at Christmas. It starts off with a Christmas tree. Well, there's a Christmas tree in the first, like, 60 seconds or so.
Right, okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
I was just...
just justifying the shit out of it.
Yeah, I'm just... I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying... Because normally, obviously, Die Hard would be... the first one would be the argument about Christmas film. It is a Christmas film. Die Hard 2 is a Christmas film. So, what year was this one? You're going to have to...
1990. Directed by Rennie Harlan, who did classics like The Long Kiss Goodnight and Cliffhanger with Stallone.
Cliffhanger, brilliant. Sorry, the cliffhanger's the one when he lets his girlfriend die at the beginning of it.
He not let her go, does he? She slips.
Bollocks. He could have saved her.
It's not his girlfriend,
is it? He's Rambo, Rocky.
Yeah, but it's not...
and Cobra.
It's not his bad, though, is it? It's old...
guy from
Rowdy Burns from Days of Thunder, isn't it? Michael Wincott, that's the Crow. It's the guy from Walking Dead, he's Daryl Dixon's brother, isn't he?
Yeah.
I
know what you mean, yeah. He's in Mallrats as well.
He's in Mallrats, yeah, the old chocolate pretzel.
So what's happening this time to old John McClane, yeah.
He's running into a bit of bother again, isn't he?
Yeah.
On Christmas time.
Yeah.
So he's in DC now, isn't he? He's gone to pick up his missus.
Yeah.
From the airport. And there's been a bit of a delay. And during this time, we start to, in very quickly, which I really like, within like the first sort of several minutes, it sets up pretty much all of the main characters, sets up the story. Mm. And... yeah, John McClane is there to pick up his missus. It all goes down the Kermit because you've got a bunch of terrorists who decide to take over the airport. As you do.
And it's the Grim Reaper from Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
That's it, yeah. William Sadler, who, when we first see him, for no
apparent reason... got his arse out.
Yeah, he's stark naked in his hotel room doing a little bit of Tai Chi.
Yeah.
But he's really sweaty as well. And then... there is a Christmas tree in it, so it's Christmas time. And so they decide they're going to take over the airport because they want to hijack Franco Nero, who's being extradited to America. And older Death from Bill and Ted is like well in there with him.
Yeah.
So they need to basically rescue him and then fuck off out of the country.
Yeah.
And then take him to a country which he can't be extradited. And then it all goes to pot.
It does. But one of the biggest problems I have with Die Hard 2, Die Harder, is the fact that there's absolutely no need or no necessity for him to get involved at all. Really.
Well, what I would argue is when you see the terrorists and they're in the terminal,
Yeah.
And they're trying to be all casual, aren't they? And they're sitting there and they're looking, the classic nudging the suitcase underneath the desk and stuff like that. And they're being, you know, and they're listening to like weather patterns and on the radios and stuff. He's the only guy
that clocks it.
That clocks it. Yeah. So therefore, he's the only guy who can do anything about it. And I don't ever feel like he just sticks his ooter in. It's he just reacts. And therefore,
then he goes into the luggage department and shoots two people.
Well, they shoot him in first, don't they?
Yeah, sorry.
Well, he asks for their ID, don't he? They try to smoke him away.
Yeah.
Out comes the Beretta, bang, bang, bang.
What's he doing with a gun in an airport anywhere? Anyway.
Well, it's America, you're talking about gun laws.
Exactly.
He can walk around anywhere with his guns.
Guns. I'm a cop.
Yeah.
So the terrorists are going in there to hijack this plane. But what they're also doing is they're preventing the other planes from landing.
Yeah, that's how they basically take the entire airport and the passengers on the planes in the air hostage, don't they?
Yeah.
So they basically hack into the system and they basically render them deaf, dumb and blind, don't they?
Mm.
So they can't do anything, like the staff and that, they can't do anything about it. No.
Fucking scary.
It is scary, actually, yeah. They take away all the landing lights and stuff.
And then they're just having to fly around and they're going to run out of fuel, aren't they, at one point? But the fucking horrible one is the British flight.
Oh, with Cole Meaney.
Yeah. You're free to land now. Yeah. But it's too, they do it so that it's, they think the runways.
They've adjusted the landing height, haven't they, by minus 200 feet. Because it's a storm, it's Christmas, there's a storm. They're in this holding pattern, they can't see wherever the bloody hell they're going. So they have to use all their radars. And therefore, the terrorists So basically, the terrorists have said, look, we've taken over the airport. Don't fuck about with it. Because if you do fuck about with it, we're going to fuck about with you. Mm. And we're going to start to implement some harsh penalties. They're warned. Anyway, they do fuck about because they're trying to find ways of saving everyone without the terrorists kind of knowing. Yeah. This time, the terrorists find out. And therefore, he decides he's going to crash an entire fucking plane.
But as usual... The people that are in charge won't have anything from McLean.
This was one of my notes I noticed watching this film, mate. So, whenever he gets involved, there's all these situations he turns up in. He's like, right, I've noticed, I've sniffed this out. You've got this geezer over here doing a little bit of a few things they shouldn't be doing. I think something's about to go down. Mm. He's got some proof of it. They're a little bit dubious.
Yeah.
Then they start to buy into it, right? And then any time there's ever, like, I don't know, like a bit of a conversation or something starts to happen, they exclude him. Every time they exclude him, like when he goes to walk in the lift and they go, no civilians. And he looks at the guy in charge and the guy in charge just looks at him back. Any time they exclude him, things get fucking worse.
Yeah.
More people die.
Yeah.
And it's McLean who keeps fixing it. You think he's got a lot of, like, patience and persistence with these people, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, just going around calling the.
What's their point of view? It's just like, oh, it's so old McLean. He was in Nakatomi last year. He thinks everything's a fucking terrorist thing going on now.
He's
gone a bit nuts.
That's what I do like. Is like they do play nod to that, and that he's had a little bit of like TV fame and stuff. And he's not fussed about it, but they know who he is. And I thought that's what made it interesting with the second one, because the first one they don't know who he is. He's just a cop.
Yeah.
And he's a man not to be underestimated. Where in the second one they find out who he is, they still aren't. Well, they still underestimate him, don't they?
Yeah.
But they know what they're up against at that point.
Yeah. Well, it's also when he goes out, when that plane's coming down, he's trying to stop him by. He's setting fire to the things and waving the fire to try.
Yeah.
And
so them. After yeah, see. When the British plane's coming down, he's out on the runway, isn't he? He's got the two poles, which he's wrapped in cloth, soaked in gasoline, and he's lit it up. He's got these fire sticks thing.
Yeah.
But again, he's the only one out there doing anything, which makes me laugh while they keep excluding him, because they say, oh, look, there's somebody out there. Who is it? It's McLean. And then they just stand there and do fuck all. Whilst he's out there doing this whole facial expression. It's like,
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Oh, yeah, he does drop that, doesn't he? But
They still do that on ITV on the second one as well. Yippee-ki-yay, Kimosabi.
So this is what we're watching. I haven't watched this one for a long time, and probably the last time I watched it was the dub version.
Yeah.
And you forget, like, because this was a 15 when it came out, how much swearing there is. I think even in, like, the first 15 minutes, the F-bomb's been dropped about 10 times at least.
Yeah.
You know, any time he's, like, having a pop at someone, they're an asshole, they're a prick, they're a fat fuck. They're a fuck. They're a motherfucker.
Yeah, he does like to give
out the insults. It's a bit like My Generation by Limp Bizkit, isn't it? Every other word's a fuck.
If only we could fly. Limp Bizkit style.
But, I think it's... I've always really liked this one. And I suppose it's a loose remake of the first one. But I really like how you've got... So you've got the villains... And the villains are relentless and they can't be negotiated with and they're just fucking horrible. They're evil to their core. And that makes a really good villain for me. Just someone you cannot bargain with, no matter what you do.
Yeah, they don't care, do they? At all.
No, they'll blow up a plane with like 250 people on it and it doesn't mean anything.
There's also the sort of bit of comic relief on there is the fact that his wife's on one of the plane. John McClane's wife's on one of the plane.
Yeah.
It's sitting next to that fucking...
William Haverton. Yeah. Dick.
Yeah, the...
The reporter.
The reporter from the first one who let it out, who his kids were and all that.
Yeah, so there's quite a bit of humour. Just going back to the villain.
She punches him.
Yeah, well, she knocks out his two front teeth, doesn't she?
Yeah.
But you've got these really horrible bad guys up against... the hero who sort of encapsulates all manner of good. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. You know, he is the all-round good guy. He's the cowboy of the Wild West, isn't he?
Mm.
But he's, you know, he reacts within a moment. He runs on instinct. He picks up on things that other people don't notice. And he puts himself in the firing line like every single time. Yeah. And I think that's a real good sort of balance of good versus evil. And then you've got the reporter that just so happens to be on the same plane.
Yeah, and he's got a
restraining
order against her because she punched him.
That's right. Yeah, this woman humiliated. What does he say? This woman assaulted me and humiliated me on national television. So then air hostess goes up to his wife. What did you do? I knocked out two of his teeth. Would you like some champagne?
Because he's been acting the arsehole since they took off.
Yeah, he really is. But then he's the only one to notice that...
the planes are underneath, aren't they?
They're all underneath. They're all in this holding pattern, but they're all quite close. But then there's another funny line where she says... His wife doesn't even look at him, but she knows he's there because he's leaned right over her and he's looking at her window. She says, aren't you within 50 yards? And he says, yeah, well, so are those planes. And you look out the window, they're literally like right outside. But just when you start to think, oh, he's not too bad.
He does it again
where he just so happens to have a member of his team who he's flying first class, by the way, but his team are in coach. So he has to go back to the thing. He gets his mate who's still got his radio to tap into the cockpit. He gets some juicy stories, gets it on the old recorder thing.
Mm.
The next thing you know, he's broadcasting like live in the bog. Do you know what I mean? All because he wants to get on the network.
Yeah.
Slimy little fuck.
Yeah, because he wants to get rid of Pulitzer.
Pulitzer.
I do like Die Hard 2, but I do think the first one is obviously the best one, and I thought the third one with Samuel Jackson did top that one, because there's something with the second one. It's just basically kind of what they were doing with films like Under Siege, where Under Siege 2 is the same story but it's on a train. And it's
You mean when they do the sequel of it?
Yeah, it's almost like we'll just do it again. Home Alone 2. We'll just put him in New York.
It's the same situation on a larger scale.
Yeah.
So in the first one, he's in the building. In the second one, he's in the airport, and then the airport grounds, and then outside the airport grounds, like Home Alone He's dominantly in the house. In the second one, he's in the whole of, like, he's in like New York City. Yeah.
But they have to write it into the fact that he does go to a house.
Yes, yeah.
But anyway, that's what about. With regards to the Die Hard franchise, I love the third one. I really like that. Mm-hmm. Because I thought Samuel Jackson was good in it, and I thought they'd made John McClane's character more three-dimensional. With regards to him, he has split up with his wife in that one. He's got an alcohol problem. He's like a bit fucking washed up, really, isn't he? Yeah. Where he keeps fucking trying to play the maverick. Anyway, there's that one. And then the fourth one, I still quite like the fourth one. The one with, what's his name in?
Justin Long.
Yeah,
because... And Kevin Smith.
Yeah, because there's quite a lot of different... sort of the ridiculous thing is when Bruce Willis surfs along the side of the wing of the plane and jumps into the helicopter.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which is a bit cheddar. But I like the difference between Justin Long and Bruce Willis, the age difference, and there's quite a lot in between that, because obviously he's proper into computers and this is how crime's being done now. Yeah. And he's trying to get his head round it, isn't he?
Well, he's even in the second one, though, isn't he? Because even, like, the wife says... she's talking to the old lady next to her who's got the taser gun, which you'd never be allowed to take on the plane. But she says, I used to have one of those mace things, but I got one of these. I tried it on my dog and the poor thing limped for a week. Why would you try it on your dog? And then she, and Mrs. McClane then says, my husband's a bit of a dinosaur. You know, he doesn't do technology, that sort of thing. And then that obviously follows on into the fourth one. He's got Timothy Oliphant, isn't it? He's the bad guy in it.
In the fourth one,
he is.
That's where him and Kevin Smith didn't get on.
Yeah, because he's the hacker, isn't he? What's Kevin Smith's name in it? Like, he goes by like a gamer tag or something. Isn't he?
It's like the wizard or something. It's similar to the one, the bloke in Brassic.
That's right, yeah.
Tim Keever. It's very much similar to that.
Yeah, I like the fourth one.
The fifth one is dog shit. Yeah, hated it.
It's awful. It is awful. The only thing I did like was the car chase bit at the beginning. I thought was all right. If you could take away one good thing about it, that was...
But even then, I thought, where are they supposed to be?
They're in Russia.
Russia. But again, it's a film, and Americans are in it, they don't give a toss about... the country they're in or anything like that.
They're just going to blow it up.
Just going around driving, like, acting like cunts.
Yeah, but he can't be bothered in that one. You can tell. That's like the beginning of when Bruce Willis... Hang on.
Hey! Go on, my son. Go on, the old son. Go on. Oh, that's a good one. Go on, my old sausage.
Lovely. That's the beginning of Bruce Willis's career, where he just doesn't give a fuck anymore. Literally just doesn't. And it's such a shame, because the first one is just iconic. The second one, I think it's really good. The third one's good, although I find, and I know what you're saying with the Samuel Jackson thing, because it does work really well. But it becomes a bit of a buddy thing.
Yeah,
and I'm not too sure if I quite liked that. I don't know. I do like it, and it's directed by John McTiernan, and he did the first one.
Yeah.
And there's some really, really, like, good bits in it. I don't know, just sometimes I just think...
The thing that I get...
It's not much of a Die Hard movie. Because I'm sure...
It's a buddy cop.
I'm sure that was something else. Do you know when they have these films? Like, I think when we did Under Siege, I said it on there as well. I'm sure Under Siege was supposed to be a sequel to something.
Yeah, and then it turns into a different...
Yeah, and I'm sure Die Hard with a Vengeance was meant to be something else originally. Mm. And then when they were doing, they think, we'll do a Die Hard 3. We're not too sure exactly what we're going to do with it. Oh, there's a script over here which we could make that into Die Hard.
Well... The third one as well, which I always find annoying, is there's two versions of it, and the only one that's available on Blu-ray and DVD is the 15 cut.
Right.
And there's so much cut out of that, and then there's the 18 version, and there's a lot more...
gore and stuff like that.
But it's more of a Die Hard film.
Yeah. Yeah, but by that point, things had really simmered down because Die Hard 2 was 15 when it came out.
Yeah.
And watching, like, you know, the non-ITV version earlier on, it's there's lots of swearing, there's lots of blood, lots of action. You know, there's a lot of like adult sort of nature going on it. Whereas, like, when you got to Die Hard 3, it was really toned down. Because I think the fourth one's like a 12. But the third one plays out almost like the same. You know, it's definitely catered for like a younger audience.
Well, they just want to get more
bums on seats and cinemas.
Bums on seats, love. Bums.
Also, what I find with the third...
Fucking out and John in fucking Bo Selector. Bums on seats.
The third one, even some of the special effects in it are pretty naff. Considering like how far they've come. Because I mean, I noticed in the second one, when you do this, they have the shots of the like the planes in the sky, and even when he's on the airfield and he sees one of the planes that's blown up, it's clearly him in front of a blue screen. But yet this is 10 years after Flash Gordon, and yet the effects are still very much the same in quality. And by the time you get to the third one, which is what, 95? About 95?
Yeah.
There's that bit where he's on the truck in the tunnel and then all the water's come along and he has to jump on the
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
So fucking because
he looks
shit.
Too small, doesn't he, as well?
He looks too small. It all just looked out of proportion. Yeah, and it's just being...
The Land of Giants.
Yeah, it is like the... Oh, I used to love Land of Giants.
On Sunday, yeah.
Yeah, right, have your old roast dinner going. That would be in the background. Bit of that. And what was the other one? What was the old... Lost in Space. Space,
yeah.
Lost in Space.
Land Danger Will Robinson.
That's it. Yeah, that was great. That
slimy professor.
Yeah. Although, I like the... Did you ever watch the film with old Matt LeBlanc and Gary Oldman?
I did a long time ago. I
liked that. Matt LeBlanc was like... We're not playing Joey for a change, you know.
Yeah.
Gary Oldman just doing what he does. You know what I mean?
Gary Oldman.
Gazzer Oldman.
The Gary Oldman baby.
But yeah, I really like Die Hard 2.
No, I like it. I just think it's the first one overshadows it completely. Mm. But yeah, it is a good movie.
I mean, it's got some great action in it. That scene when they have. When he has to go to the Skywalk to the new terminal to use, because they think they can tap into the new antenna and set up a like secret signal that the terrorists can't monitor, and that way they can the Dulles Tower staff can then talk to the pilots in the system, and they have to go across this Skywalk, and that's when you've got Robert Patrick, who's T-1000 later on. John Leguizamo's in there somewhere. No, he isn't. John Leguizamo's in the headquarters for the terrorists. And there's this whole fucking shootout. Fucking shootout! And I'll come here for a fucking shootout. What's that, a fucking rolling pin? You'll bake me a fucking cake. Waste of my fucking time. We'll have to do that as well.
Oh, yeah, we will, yeah. But, I do like that.
Yeah, and without waffling on for about 20 minutes, which I could, because I love this action scene. It's got, for me, it's got like everything like an action sequence should have. It's got really good just like choreography. It's got lots of like action, great sound editing, lots of people jumping here, there, and all over the place, and slow-mo. So there's a bit where when he jumps down, he's up in the air vent again, and he's talking to himself as he does in the first one, and so there's like a SWAT team who are escorting one of the Dulles Tower staff, like the engineer guy Barnes.
Yeah,
they all get wiped out. He's left by his lonesome. T-1000 is just about to pop a cap in his ass, and McClane comes out of the air vent, jumps down. So all these mercenaries, these terrorists, are trying to take him out. Obviously they can't. He's McClane. But there's this great bit where he's just rolling along on the floor, and for some reason it just goes into slow... Well, not for some reason. It goes into slow motion to heighten the suspense. And he's just rolling over, and it's just fucking... It's like a medium shot. He's just fucking like, bang, bang, bang. It's just, oh. And you literally it's like punch in the air.
Yeah.
And then he gets clattered with... There's a guy on the... What is it? On scaffolding.
Yeah.
And he... pushes the scaffolding over. The guy falls over. He gets crushed to fuck. He's dead. Gone. And And then there's like another bit, it comes down and it takes McClane now, isn't it? And he's underneath it, and his gun, his Beretta, is now on the escalator, which is stopped.
Mm.
And then this guy sort of gets up, just so happens to run out of bullets, and he comes up with the really cheesy line, "I'm going to kick your fucking ass." Brilliant original.
Yeah.
And he starts walking to McClane. McClane is like, "Fuck, what do I do?" Grabs the pole, turns the travelator thing back on.
Yeah.
The gun starts coming towards him. The guy thinks, "Fuck, yeah. I've got to get to that gun before he does." And then one of absolute many moments where Bruce Willis is just pulling these ridiculous facial expressions. He's scrambling to get towards the gun. He's like, oh, and he's just so happens to pick up the gun, smokes this guy, and some of it's done in slow mo. It's fucking brilliant.
Wow,
you can tell how excited I am.
Yeah, and, I can. You're very sweating, excited about you know? That. You love a bit of Die Hard too.
There is some really, really good like action sequences. But then that's Rennie Harlan, like some of those films mentioned before. I've got some brilliant action sequences in it. And for a film, it is basically a remake of the first one.
Mm.
It's really cool, but there's
we're just going to fuck you up.
There's also the thing, because he finds a radio, doesn't he, McClane?
Mm.
He finds one of the terrorist radio, and he wants to listen into what they're hearing, but he can't because there's some kind of like code switch thing on it. It's got a million combinations. So he's just a barn, so can you not crack it? And he's like, "Oh, come on, mate. It's like a million combinations. I mean, I'm good, but I mean, come on." And he says, "Next time, you know, before you kill one of them, get the code." Well, every now and again, when McClane needs to get somewhere quick in the airport, he goes down to the little sewers bit and he goes to see his mate Marvin, don't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, Marvin.
Marvin. And Marvin just so happens to have one of these walkie-talkies. And it's another bit of that. I don't know if it's supposed to be humour. I found it funny. And he says to him, he goes, "Oh, I can hear everything." And, I skipped ahead. And Marvin says, "Do you want to buy it for $20? He's like, "How about I let you live?" He's like, "You know how to drive a bargain." But before that bit, when he, obviously the map is on the walkie-talkie, he hears talking, he's like, "What's going on?" He picks up the map, sees the walkie-talkie, and he grabs Marvin, he goes, "Ah!" It's like a Roger Moore Bond moment. But he's like, "Ah!"
Ooh, finger up the bum, Rog.
But yeah, what with that and all the action, I mean, even the chase on the snowmobile, the banter he has with the chief is fucking brilliant, isn't it? Especially when he shoots him, but he's got blanks. When he figures out that the
bulletproof vest.
When he finds out the Rangers called in are all part of it and they're all using blanks because they don't want to kill each other.
Oh, the double cross.
The double cross.
Yeah.
And the chief's like had enough of McClane and his cowboyness. And he just says like, "Arrest him."
Yeah.
So McClane basically kicks him off, doesn't he? And he unleashes a round.
On him, yeah.
Yeah, he's like shitting himself. He thinks he's done.
Yeah.
But they're all blanks. Blanks. Blanks.
Yeah.
But the sort of the discrepancy in that scene is he then says to all his team, "Put your guns down." They would have shot the fuck out of McClane.
Yeah.
As soon as he started opening fire, bang, you're gone.
Yeah.
But,
It is a good film. It is a good film.
And I'd say the last thing, because I mean, I could bang on about this all day, and I'd be happy to, is at the end, when all is well, and his missus's plane, it comes down, they inflate the old rafts, don't they? You know, the old slide rafts?
Yeah.
Now, what disappointed me was you see about four or five of them do it, especially his missus. And they literally just get down on their bum and they slide. I would be jumping out of that fucking plane. Yeehaw! Sliding down that. Way!
Yeah.
I'd be enjoying that big time.
He likes a sled.
I do, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Top film for me. Great Christmas film.
Top action. Well, that's Die Hard 2, people.
Die Harder. Oh, also, and then the title. It's brilliant because it comes up just the same as the first one. It goes boom. Yeah. You don't get that anymore. They don't bother.
Nah.
I might chuck it up at the end. Crap.
Great. And I love your enthusiasm about it.
Yippee-ki-yay.
I want you to tell all your friends about me.
Where can they find us, Kev? Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and now Threads. Any emails or recommendations, pop us over an electronic mail to podculturevultures@gmail.com.
Beautiful. And please remember to subscribe, follow, and rate, and all the other business that goes with your social media claptrap. But until next time, catch you on a flippity flop.
Gully bye.
That it? Did you do anything else?
No, there's no more.
Right then, well, fuck off.
This is great banter. It really is.